Anytime you hear yourself saying, I got to, I have to, I must, I should, I ought to, I supposed to, and I need to, that ain't you. So if you have that little voice going inside, I should be doing this, I ought to be doing this, I need to be doing more of this, I ought to be doing this. If you're not spontaneously disciplined to do it, it ain't you. So one of the signs that it's truly high on your value is you spontaneously are inspired to do it. You don't need extrinsic motivation to do it. Anytime you need extrinsic motivation, it's not what's important to you.
Born in 92 on the block with the sharks, cut from a different cloth, y'all would get ripped apart. You want a diamond, then you gotta get it in the dark. We dropping nuggets like Carmelo went to Rucker Park. Now we eating from state to state, we scrape the plate. I put my eggs in a basket, took a leap of faith. I took a chance, now we growing, see the impact. Decoding success with special guests, now let's bring Matt.
Hey everyone, Matt LaBrie here, your host of the Decoding Success podcast. Welcome to the show, everyone. Episode number 238. This episode today is for the individuals that want a great life. Now, here's the thing, a life by design, right? They want to master their life and their destiny. That is exactly what our guest here today is going to help us do. He is on a mission and he has a vision to share knowledge and wisdom that empowers us to become that master. The master of our own life and the master of our destiny, life by design. There's a quote that's out there that says, a great life is not by accident. It's built on purpose. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about today. Purposefully fulfilling our life and destiny. Now we are joined by Dr. John D. Martini. I am sure you've heard the name. His work is revealed in The Secret. He's an author, a speaker, a global educator, a founder. An absolutely incredible individual who is dedicating time today to help us live life by design. Now, before diving any further into who Dr. John D. Martini is beyond what I've said and what's in this episode, I'm going to urge you to make sure that you are aware of the fact that there are people in your life that also want to live life by their design. Maybe not by yours, and that's okay. We're all unique individuals, but they want to live life by design as well. They want to be the own master of their life and their destiny. So what I'm asking you to do here is to make sure that they are aware of this episode, that they are aware of Dr. John D. Martini's work and his words right here on this powerful episode that will shift your life. So with that being said, make sure you're sharing this episode with them as we are joined by a world-renowned human behavior expert who has over 4 decades of research across multiple disciplines. And being that he has so much extensive knowledge and wisdom and experiences, his work is often described as the most comprehensive body of work, an extensive library of wisdom and wisdom of the highest and most valuable order, all of which is being shared here today. So again, I'm urging you to make sure that you are sharing this as Dr. John D. Martini takes the time out of his day to share all that he knows with us right here on the show. And without further ado, we're bringing to you our friend, Dr. John D. Martini. Dr. D. Martini, welcome to Decoding Success. Your body of work is absolutely incredible. Very grateful for you being here. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to make an impact on Decoding Success. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Of course. Now, there is a quote that I read on your website. I wanted to kick this off here, and it says, a great life is not by accident. It is built on purpose. And I figured this is the best place to start for this conversation that we're going to have, which is probably going to go in many different directions. But my question to you becomes, what does it take to build a great life?
A deep introspection about what's truly most deeply meaningful and inspiring and priority to you, what you really value most, and giving yourself permission to structure your life where you are focusing and concentrating on the very highest priority actions daily and surrounding yourself with experts to delegate everything else, and then inspire them by a vision to help them and you go and achieve something pretty extraordinary. I would say you're not going to live an inspired life doing desperate things. If you don't fill your day with high priority actions that inspire you, your day is designed to fill up with low priority distractions. It won't. So don't do low priority things. Take command of the priority and stick to what's truly most important. I don't do anything but teach, research, and write. I haven't cooked since I was 24. I have specialized cooks. I don't drive for 32 years. I have drivers. I have a captain for my ship. I have a pilot for flights. I surround myself with experts, administrative people, financial people. I want to do what I love doing, which is teach, research, and write. So I do that. And I delegate everything else. I jokingly delegate everything. Anything that I'm not great at, anything that I'm not masterful at, I try to delegate and stick to my core competencies. Of course, that leads to a joke with my girlfriend, because my wife passed away. My girlfriend, I tell her, you know, because my expertise is not necessarily sexuality, if I hire Hugh Jackman or Brad Pitt or Gerard Butler or George Clooney to take care of that particular aspect, will you still love me? And my girlfriend every time says, I will love you even more. So delegation, that's a joke, by the way, delegation does pay off. It liberates you to do what you really love and be inspired by life where you can make the biggest contribution.
Now, Dr. DeMartini, I guess my first question in regards to this, which I love, by the way, and I'm going to speak for the people because not everyone at this moment has the access to a cook or, you know, to hire a driver or so on, or to even hire a team, right? Maybe an administrative assistant. Not everyone has access or the ability right this second. So what's your advice to those people that may be working to get there, but also want to apply what you're discussing here today?
Well, actually, the wake-up call that there is no such thing as an excuse you can't. Get over that, because that's not true. You will make more, serve more, if you delegate more. And people think, well, when I get more, then I can delegate. No, it goes the other way around. When I delegate, I end up making more. But you have the responsibility to make sure that you delegate wisely. That means you hire somebody that's more competent than you to get the job done and to liberate you so you don't have to micromanage, to go and do the thing that produces even more, because you're not doing what you love doing in a way that is compensatory and that is sustainable and fair exchange with people and producing greater than the cost, then of course you're not going to delegate. But if you find what it is that you love doing, where you can't wait to get up in the morning and be of service to people, people can't wait to get that service. And if you focus on the highest priority, most productive thing that serves the ever greater numbers of people, you will make more income quicker than you will waiting until you get something to hire, delegate. I was 27 years old and I read a book by Alec McKinsey, The Time Trap. And I had just started my business. I had one assistant and I was doing everything. And I was, you know, doing payroll and doing disbursements and doing bank reconciliations and ordering things. And I mean, I was doing everything you could do in a clinical situation, an administrative situation. And I was majoring in minors and minoring in majors. And when I read this book, I went to the bookstore and I got this book. I needed to figure out how to get out of this time trap. And as I read that book and make notes in it, I decided to create a 6-column summary of this book or portion of this book. And I made a list of every single thing that I did in a day, professionally and personally. I mean, every action I did, and I looked over a 3-month period of what I was doing in those 3 months, because I wanted to not just take one day, but look at what I might do in a day over a period of time, because different days I had different things I would do. And I made a list, and it was an exhaustive list, multiple pages. And I did everything, and I didn't do generalities like marketing. I went down to the call so-and-so, write this copy, every detail of the actions I was doing. And then after I did that, I had 6 columns on a piece of paper. That was the first column. The second column was, how much does that produce per hour? And what is the actual service to other people where they are willing to pay for that service? How much does it generate per hour? And then I would extrapolate that, because sometimes I'd spend 30 minutes on it, I'd double it. And if I'd spend 2 hours on it, I'd half it to get what it was in dollars per hour. And some things I was making nothing. I wasn't charging anything for them. Others I was charging more. And I was looking at how I was spending my time and being really honest about it. Because a lot of time we think busyness is productivity. And I made a really assessment on that and looked at what I was really doing so I wouldn't lie to myself about what I was doing. I was like a drone watching over me and looking honestly. What am I doing? And I looked at the most productive thing. And believe it or not, at that time, even though I was clinically trained for 10 years to be a specialist in the health field, me going out and doing a presentation to a group of people and generating new patients was actually more productive per hour than me clinically being in a cubicle working with patients, which was astonishing. Here I was 10 years in school for doing that. And that wasn't the most productive thing I could be doing with my time. Going out and generating new clients and going out on television and generating more clients was way more productive economically. And I also loved presenting. So I realized that. Then the next column I was doing was how much meaning it has on a 1 to 10 scale. Are you absolutely inspired to do it? Is this something you absolutely dream about and you're concentrating on it? It's a 10. If it's a 1, it's like, got to do it, have to do it, should do it, supposed to do it, need to do it. And I rated it based on meaning. At an extremely high meeting, it was a 10, and low meeting was a 0 to 1. And I redid that entire list with that number. And then I looked at where was the most meaningful things and the most productive things per hour. And I reprioritized them according to productivity and meaning. And I looked at where they overlap, where was the most productive and meaningful. I want to find that because where I can't wait to get up in the morning and people can't wait to get it. And then the next column I wrote down, how much would it cost to delegate that by a specialist? And I don't mean just the salary. I mean, the parking, the training, the insurance, the space usage, the materials, the depreciation schedule, the training, everything. What would it cost? Bonuses, incentives. And I've narrowed down to the dollar of what exactly it would cost to have somebody do that. And then I prioritize that according to spread between what it produced per hour, that action, versus what it would cost per hour. And I prioritize according to spread. So I then knew what was worth delegating to generate the most income and what was worth me doing. And the next one was how much actual time I spent on average per day doing it. And the final one was the final prioritization, taking in the four variables and or the three main variables. And when I got through with that, I layered that into ones that are obviously the thing I would be wise to delegate to extract the most, you know, surplus labor value out of people, and ones that I would be wise to do, my specialty and my love to do. And I reprioritized it. And this thing took a few hours to do. And when I got through, I then immediately put a job description for each layer and hired somebody on the spot. And the moment I hired somebody on the spot to do that particular action, I felt lighter. Occasionally, I would have to hire two people. I hire somebody that didn't work out to get the second person. But once I got the person on the team, done. And I was like, oh, liberated, done. I'm not doing low priority things. Anytime you're doing low priority things, you devalue yourself. Anytime you're doing high priority things, you value yourself. And when you value yourself, so does the world. And so you don't grow in value until you to live by priority. Well, once I did that, I did the next layer, the next layer. In 18 months from where I started with one assistant, 18 months later, I had five doctors, 12 staff members, a 5,000 square foot office compared to a 970 square foot office, and my net profit was tenfold. So it didn't cost to delegate, it paid. Because what it did is it gave me the ability to go out and do something, not be trapped by doing micromanaging of weird, trivial stuff that wasn't inspiring, it didn't produce. It allowed me to go out and do the highest priority thing. And I would go and speak, and I could generate $15,000 to $20,000 in an hour doing a talk from new clients, more so than I could even $1,500 an hour doing the clinical. And so once I did that, I hired somebody to go and schedule those and keep me busy two times a day sometime. And I was generating, my thing went to a multi-million dollar practice in a very short period of time. No problem hiring people. So people think, well, when I get ahead, I will then do it. It's like people who think, well, when I get extra, I'll save. No, the people who save get extra. When you manage money wisely, you get more money to manage. If you wait to get something, entropy takes over, and unexpected bills always erode the potential for profit. And that's a lesson people have to learn through trial and error, or they learn from mentorship. Mm-hmm. So when I did that, it doesn't cost to delegate, it pays.
I love this. A lot of questions here, and I'm gonna go back to the book that you had mentioned. If my research isn't mistaken me, and clearly my research could be a little dated after you and I had a conversation before we started the show, I believe you read over 30,000 books. You can correct me if I'm wrong there, but I'm curious, what do you feel like have been the three, maybe the top five most influential books on you personally?
Well, right now it's 30,000 and today will be 600. So I'm finishing up another book today. The most significant book that I highly recommend to any human being on this planet that wants to master their life, and I don't mean just master one area, but master all the areas of life, spiritual, mental, career, financial, family, social, physical areas of life, is a book by Mortimer Adler called Syntopicon Volumes 1 and 2. It's actually two volumes that make up one big volume that is a synthesis of the greatest ideas by the greatest minds over the last 2,700 years. And it covers the most important ideas that a human being who wants a PhD in life would want to study. And it's two magnificent volumes called Syntopicon Volumes 1, S-Y-N-T-O-P-I-C-O-N. It's produced by Britannica. It's part of the Great Ideas series. It's the first two volumes of the Great Ideas series. And it's a summary of the greatest minds in the Western world and the most important topics that a human being would want to know for mastery of life.
What in that book, volume one or two, really struck a chord with you?
Just the in-depth summary of, it's like putting your hand into a pot of glue where it sticks, but you're putting your hand into the pot of the greatest minds over the last 2,700 years. The greatest philosophers and thinkers and inventors and creators have left immortal effects in history. You're standing on the shoulders of giants. These are the giants. So Sir Isaac Newton is one of these individuals, right? Huygens and Plato. And what it is, it's a summary of the most important ideas about life.
I love that.
So I'm a firm believer. You know, I'm not interested in reading a little fluffy self-help book. That doesn't mean much to me. But reading and standing on the shoulders of classical people that are doing, they've done extraordinary things, I'm interested in that. I want to know the originators of the thinkers of the disciplines of life to stand on their shoulders. That's what this is a summary of.
That's a beautiful thing. Now, I'm going to bounce back and forth a little bit here. Where did the desire to measure metrics come from in your life? You know, you were just discussing the chart that you had built out, and I think it's wonderful. And I'm saying to myself, damn, like I kind of need to do more of that in my life. Where did the desire to take metric of habits or tasks, and even beyond that, I know you're a man of metrics. Where did that come from for you?
The dream. I've been working on a master plan book since I was 17, and it's, you know, over 6,000 pages today. And it's a master plan about what and how I want my life. I don't want to live by default or by duty. I want to live by design. And I want to create the life how I wanted it. You know, I want to create original ideas that serve massive numbers of people in the world. I wanted to create a global business, international business. I wanted to create financial independence. I wanted to have a global family. I want to have social influence and meet amazing people. I wanted to have a vital body. I'm almost 68 and I'm still cranking at an intense schedule. And I wanted to be inspired, you know, real inspired, leaving a mark in the world that way. And so I wrote out exactly what I wanted to do and exactly how I wanted to do it and strategies on how to do it and found out who was doing it and found out how they did it, strategized this. And then I wanted to know, am I doing it? I want to make sure that I'm setting goals that are congruent, that are disciplined, that I don't just fantasize about, but that I'm actually taking actions on. And then that's where the metrics came. I want to know what worked and what didn't work. And I want to know, am I making progress towards it? Because if I see no progress, it must not be important to me. So I keep records of everything that I do. You know, when I do consulting for companies, I keep records of every corporation that I consult, every CEO I consult, every celebrity I do, every royalty, every person in business, any television person. I keep records of every radio and television and newspaper and magazine. And I mean, 1,530 magazines that I've written for. I just added another one today. I'm going to do another one today, Inspired Success Magazine. And so I keep record of those because I had goals. I had a goal to do 1,500 magazines. I just raised it to 2,000 because I broke that record. So these are things that I do for me. Nobody else sees these except me. But they're things that I intend to do and I wanted to accomplish. And the same thing on economics. I had a goal to reach a certain, if I want to be 50, and now I'm shooting for 100 times financial independence. And so I want to be able to have whatever I needed to not have to ever work. I want to do 100 times that amount in investments, 100 times that. So I have philanthropic goals. I'm a firm believer in you that if you write down something that is truly aligned and congruent with what you value most, that you spontaneously are inspired to do on a daily basis, you will achieve more. And if you metric it, you will get refined feedback and you will be able to refine it more efficiently, do it more effectively. And I find that by doing that, it keeps me current. It keeps me on track. It allows me to synchronize opportunities. It allows me to see and connect. It tends to make me resonate with people that match it. I mean, there's just so many benefits of doing a metric and monitoring it and keeping current with it. I don't want to write a goal and then not look at it for 10 years. Oh, it happened. That didn't mean anything to me.
Right. Now, you mentioned what you value. And I always ask this question, maybe not always, but I've asked it quite a few times. And I'm just curious to hear people's perspectives on values. And this is why, when you say what you value, a lot of people, including myself, have had the societal, parental, friends, culture stack on top of us these layers of things that aren't truly us at our core. So what's your opinion and or take on how to remove those layers to get down to our true essence, to understand what it is that we actually value versus what we've been told to value, and in return kind of believe that those were our values?
I've been studying values for, it'll be 44 years here in, I think, May or June. And so I've seen all the BS that goes on about values. Half the stuff that's written on it needs to be tossed, because it's usually a moral imperative imposed by tradition, convention, or somebody on the outside telling you how you should be. Anytime you hear yourself saying, I got to, I have to, I must, I should, I ought to, I supposed to, and I need to, that ain't you. So if you have that little voice going inside, I should be doing this, I ought to be doing this, I need to be doing more of this, I ought to be doing this. If you're not spontaneously disciplined to do it, it ain't you. So one of the signs that it's truly high on your value is you spontaneously are inspired to do it. You don't need extrinsic motivation to do it. Anytime you need extrinsic motivation, it's not what's important to you. Because something that's truly important to you is something you do intrinsically. So I don't need to be motivated. No, you won't find one human being in the last 50 years that said, I saw DeMartini, he needed to be motivated to teach and research and write. No, it didn't happen. That's something I love doing. It's something I do. I do it every day. I delegate everything else. I do that. So finding out what it is that you spontaneously are inspired to do. And if you look carefully, there's value determinants that are not based on mothers and fathers and preachers and teachers and, you know, local communities and conventions and traditions and mores of individual and collective authorities. It's a transcendent awareness if you're actually living authentically. You're transcending all that. You're not paying attention to the herd. You're being heard. And the key in this is simply to look at exactly how do you fill your space. You know, right in front of me is my computer. I'm in front of it teaching every day. I do podcasts every day. I do writing and webinars every day. I'm researching every day. I'm having meetings. So look at what you fill your space with, because what you fill your space with most in your intimate and personal space reveals what's important to you. And look at what the most utilitarian aspect of it is. What is it used for? That tells you what's valuable. How do you spend your time? You make time, find time, and spend time. Things are valuable, and you run out of time for things that aren't. And then you look at what energizes you. When you're doing something you love doing, it's in high in your values, your energy goes up. When you're not, it goes down. You're drained or gained. Drained if it's low, gained if it's high. And then you look at where your money is, because you find money, make money, and spend money on things that are valuable to you. You don't get around to doing it. By the way, these questions I'm asking are on a value determination process, which is free, complimentary, and private on my website, drdemartini.com. So please go and take advantage of it. It's free, it's private. Please do it. The next one is, where are you most organized in your life? Where are you organized? I have knowledge that's organized. I have my research organized. I have all the things that are valuable to me organized. Things that aren't, I delegate. I don't pay attention to it. I don't pay attention to my cooking. And I don't do that. I haven't cooked since I was 24. I got a private Michelin rated chef. So what I do is I basically learn not to do desperate things by looking at what I do spontaneously and then delegating the rest. And then what you look at where you're most organized, and then where you're most disciplined. I'm incredibly disciplined to teach. You can count on me to be doing seminars during the day. You can count on me to be doing research every day. I don't let people down on that area. Look at where you're actually spontaneously disciplined and nobody has to remind you to do it, and where you're focused. Then look at what you think about, what you visualize, and what you internal dialogue with yourself about how you would love your life to be, that shows evidence of coming true. If there's no evidence, it's not important to you. The things that are really important to you, you don't give up on. You don't see failure. You see feedback, and you just keep refining and you keep working towards it. So if you gave up on it, it's not important to you. Don't lie to yourself. If it's really important to you, you don't give up on it. So you look at what is it you think about, visualize, and affirm about how you would love your life that shows evidence coming true. Then you look at what do you want to converse with other people about most? What do you want to talk to people about? What do you keep bringing the conversation to? You know I'm going to be talking about mastering life and human potential and awareness and, you know, anything that along the journey that's involved in that for 50 years, I've been devouring it. And then you look at what inspires you and what's common to the people who inspire you. Well, all the great philosophers, all the Nobel Prize winners, all the greatest achievers in any field, I've been studying their lives for all these years, and I'm fascinated by that. I get inspired, I get tears in my eyes, you know, talking about it, thinking about it, reading about it, meeting those. I've met 4,000 people have done extraordinary things on the planet. So I'm a firm believer that if you put your hand in the pot of glue, it sticks. So look at what you actually want to talk about and what inspires you. What brings tears of inspiration? The next one is, what is it that's the most consistent, persistent goals you have in your life that is coming true, that you're making it happen? That the things you don't give up on, you're relentless in the pursuit of. Anything that's a relentless pursuit that is persevered and determined, that's high in your value. And the last one is, what do you spontaneously want to learn, study, read about, and watch on YouTube? What's the thing? Because we always want to learn what's most important. So if I look at what that is, there'll be a pattern. And if it's not a pattern, there's a lie. But if you look, you'll see an absolute clear pattern of what that is. And you answer that question, three answers for each of those questions, and look at, of those 39 answers, of 13 questions, what is the one that answers the most, second most, and third most? I guarantee you, your path would be along that path. And it's not something you got to do, have to do, must or should. It's something you're inspired intrinsically to do. And that's the area where you excel. That your identity revolves around it. Your teleological purpose and mission is that pathway. Your epistemological learning is about that pathway. Your mastery path is that path, I promise you. I've been doing it for almost 50 years.
This is really powerful. This is absolutely powerful. I'm curious. I want to jump back. You mentioned at like 17, I believe it was 17, you said that you created what seems like a master plan for your life, right? You wrote down that you wanted to be in 1500 or write for 1500 magazines, so on and so forth. Do you feel that the master plan that you wrote down for your life aligned with what could be considered as a divine plan for Dr. Demartini? Or do you not believe in divine plan? That's totally fine as well.
Well, what some people call the divine master plan, as Newton described it or Swedenborg described it, is where human will matches divine will. Now, divine will is a term that theologians use for the order of the universe and the intrinsic soul's calling for an individual. So yeah, I think from a theological perspective, because I speak on that topic sometimes, that divine master plan and your master plan is where human will matches predestination. They're the one and the same at that point. And anytime you're living by your highest values, your most objective, your most neutral, you're least influenced by external circumstances, you're least judging it. Because when you're judged and you exaggerate yourself over others, you try to get them to live in your values, which is futile. And when you minimize and exaggerate others, you try to get to live in their values, which is futile. And that's where the chaos is. That's where you end up dissipating your energies. But when you live congruently with your own highest value and you're most objective and neutral and you're not judging and you're loving your life, human will matches divine will. The predestination and free will are the same. The necessity and contingency, determinism and indeterminism are matched. And so, yes, that's the Aristotle called the highest value the telos. And the telos was the final cause in his four causes. And it was the representation of where theologians later in Christianity and Islam and those areas called the divine master plan. That's what they're describing, the calling. The calling that the theologians and the Christians later called it in the missionary work they did in the centuries later is exactly that state. So finding out your highest value, I assure you, is the calling. That is the calling in your life. That's your métier. That's your chief aim. That's your primary objective. That's your magnificent obsession, as Tolleson would call it.
This is so interesting. I'm curious, what's a question you wish more people would ask you?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. That question's good, because I don't know the answer to that.
that's
totally
fine. I love
whatever questions they do. Whatever question they ask it, if I know it, I answer. If I don't know it, I say, I don't know, but let's find out.
I love that. No, I just wanted to ask because, I mean, I know that you've done a plethora of podcasts. I know you have another one coming up right after this. So I can only imagine how many you do per week, per month, per year, so on and so forth. But I want to get a little bit more clear on human will, divine will. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, all right, and this is a silly example because it's not necessarily what I want in life. But if I said, all right, I want to become the president of the United States. Now, does that mean that that's just in the cards for me per se, just because that's what I want?
If you say that, I mean, I've seen people make up fantasies about themselves, but the question is there a spontaneous action on a daily basis that's moving you in that direction, that you're building incremental momentum to use whatever happens along the way to escalate that until you get your outcome? How perseverant, how dedicated. You know, I'm a firm believer if you do something and keep doing it, you eventually have everybody else die out. You end up at the top. You just got to keep going. You know, I'm watching some of the other speakers that I've known for years all pass away gradually. And I'm the one that's rising up in age. So I think that's just part of the game. But if you don't see any evidence of taking action on it, you're not really pursuing it. You're not making progress on it. You're not metricing and there's no progress on it. It's a pipe dream. But if you see that you're making progress on it on a daily basis, it will build momentum and you will then start having synchronicity start to emerge. So if it's truly high in your values, your human will matches divine will. If it's low in your values, it's a fantasy. The way you know it's a fantasy is if you'll do it if it's easy and the second it gets difficult, you want to give up.
Now, does progress equal consistency in that aspect? Like if I'm consistent day in and yeah?
I mean, if you ask yourself, what is the highest priority action I can do today that can help me fulfill my mission on earth? And you do that action and you make one step closer, that you're going to get there if you just stay with it. You just got to keep doing it. You know, I first started to read. I had to learn how to read when I was a teenager because I had learning problems as a child. Once I learned how to read, I went, okay, let's go to work. So I started reading. I never stopped. And, you know, I figured, okay, I made a list of every known ology that was known on the planet. There was about 250. And I listed them all. And then as they came, new ones came up, I've added it to it. And I made a commitment to read 100 books in each of those ologies. And that's what led to all the reading, because I wanted to understand the most universal principles that would stand the test of time, that to build a body of knowledge on that I could share with people. So I felt confident that I gave them something that they're going to be able to stand on. I wanted something that was showing in every discipline, a principle that was solid in each of those disciplines. That's why I pursued those studies.
What are the characteristics we need to embody? You know, maybe it's three, maybe it's five, that you feel are, you know, the absolute foundation for mastering your life.
Well, there's a thing called scattering, and there's a thing called supertasking. And supertasking is finding out the one thing that is the greatest pathway that you want to dedicate your energies to, that core competence. You know, for Warren Buffett, it's investments, right? For Bill Gates, it was originally creating his company, Microsoft, and now it's his philanthropy. But finding that one thing that is absolutely the core competence, the thing that you can't wait to do, that you spontaneously love doing. I have friends that are at surfing. I was a surfer at one time that I did. I rode big waves, but some are just, their life is that. I mean, that's every day they do it. Finding that one thing that they excel at, and then linking the other areas of your life to that. Because if you say, okay, how is eating wisely and how is doing a routine of exercise helping me fulfill my mission of teaching? So if I sit down and I've got headsets on and I'm going through a book and listening to a book as I'm working out or whatever, fantastic, or I'm going for my run or whatever, then I have that and I link them together. A supertasking process is linking all the areas of your life and all the action steps proven to master that area to your highest value. So you see everything on your way, not in your way. Otherwise, the things that are low on your values, you'll procrastinate, hesitate, and frustrate on.
Right. Now, when we reach new levels in our life, do we have to remaster ourselves when we reach that new level? Because I mean, I'm 29 years old, Dr. DeMartini. Every time I hit a new level, I know that there's obviously more growth, more personal development, more everything that needs to come about. So I'm curious what your take is there.
There's no end to growth. Albert Einstein called it holy curiosity. You're going to, no matter what you know, there's always, what you know is always bigger than what you know. You know, as you know something, what the unknown is always vastly infinite compared to what the known is. So you're going to constantly want to grow in your knowledge. I don't have this idea that I want to be done. I have an idea that I want to keep a cutting edge and keep growing and keep learning. And whenever you accomplish something, there's no reason why you can't accomplish something more. Unless you choose to go, okay, I'm done on that section. I want to go in a different section. But the reality is there's no end to that. And I just find that some people that they go, well, I want to retire. It usually means when you want to take a break, you want to escape on a vacation and you want to retire, that usually means you didn't find out what you love doing. Because when you find out what you love doing, you're still doing it. Buffett and Munger, 98 and 90 something years old, are still cranking. You know, I mean, Gates is still cranking. Bezos is still cranking. They don't stop because they've become billionaires. I've got 18 billionaires that live on the ship with me here. I don't see anybody stopping. And the ones that do, they usually get into debauchery and they start running down and they get sick and they end up dissipating away. If you're not stimulating, if you're not pursuing challenges on a daily basis that inspire you, you're going to keep attracting challenges that don't. And one is negentropic that makes life, and the other is entropic that brings death. So if you're not filling your day with things that inspire you and that are challenges that you want to solve and make a difference in to bring fulfillment, I think you're missing out on the magnificence of life.
I definitely agree with that.
And yeah. I think it keeps you youthful.
That's a beautiful thing. I'm curious, what's a piece of advice that you've personally received? And I know that you've been speaking for 50 years, a really incredible journey, obviously a very wise man. And I'm very grateful for this opportunity to be able to amplify your wisdom. What's a piece of advice you didn't want to hear at the time it was given to you, but proved to be true over time?
People told me that I need to specialize in the one thing. And I found it that I loved studying a lot of things, but I found the common thread. If you're an individual that has a desire for lots of things, find the common thread to focus on. So in my situation, I wanted to master wealth building. Right. I want to be financially independent, be fortunate and be in the top 0.0001% kind of thing. I want to have global influence, reach billions of people. I have all these goals and things. OK, but in my situation, I found, what's the common thread to it? If I scatter and I do multitasking, I'm not as effective as I find the single task and super task it. So I found out that I want to master the art of human behavior. And I want to be one of the greatest teachers in the field and have the broadest breadth of depth of knowledge in that field of anybody who's ever lived. So I focus on that. And that encompasses all those areas. And I get to exemplify those areas. And those things are all get achieved. So I find the common thread. Now, I first was told to specialize in one thing, and I turned it into a supertasking process. And I resisted the idea of just being a financial guy or just a doctor. I never felt fulfilled that way. So I find all those things that I love doing, I found the common thread to it and supertasked it into one area and allowed me to master and accomplish all those. And if you put in way more hours than the average person, you know, when I was in school, I'd instead of reading one book for the class, I'd read 10 books for the class. I'd put in extra effort. And as a result of it, you get way more done. You know, time times intensity gives results. The more intensely you focus and concentrate on accomplishing something, the faster the results. And you can get 10 times more things done in less time if you're efficient. And if you delegate, you can get a vast amount of things done through delegation. It doesn't have to be done through you. I mean, I have people that help me in book production and audio production. You know, I don't do all that. I have somebody that does that for me, and I can get more done by it. Otherwise, I'm going to be scattering myself doing stuff that's uninspiring. I want to be able to teach, research, and write. So I now what I do is I have somebody that transcribes that. They immediately put it into blogs, put it into articles, put it into book chapters, put it into things that allow and serve as many people. And we try to get it out into every possible vehicle. And I have people specializing in that. So I just teach, research, and write.
Now, it sounds like you, like many humans on Earth, have dealt with what I would say is a projection of other people's limitations. And I think you just gave us an example of that. What's your advice for someone listening to this to kind of box that out in a sense? You know, someone told
thank
you to focus.
Thank you, but no thank you.
That's it.
When somebody says, I should, I just repeat it back. I should, according to who? I should, according to who? I'm supposed to, according to who? Thank you, but no thank you.
I love that.
Anybody that's not respecting me enough to communicate in a way that's respectful back, I usually have fill my day with other individuals. If you're not prioritizing what you're doing, you're not prioritizing how you're perceiving, you're not prioritizing what you're spending your reading on, you're studying on, you're not prioritizing who you're hanging out with, you're probably going to scatter yourself and dilute your potential.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, what do you feel like is the most crucial piece of knowledge or wisdom when mastering your life and destiny?
I pretty well said it, and that's keeping to priority. Identifying what your highest value is and working a way to delegate everything else and stick to the highest priority thing. The thing that you absolutely love most. Most people don't give themselves permission. I have people every single week in seminars and podcasts, and they ask questions and say, well, I got to do this. I have to do this. I need to do this. What about this? How am I supposed to do that? They're not being resourceful, and they're basically thinking the external world dictates their destiny. Look, when the voice and the vision on the inside is louder than all opinions on the outside, you begin to master your life, as I said in The Secret many years ago.
Now, it almost sounds like, well, let me ask this. What if we just changed our language, right? Because a lot of times, when you say that, I kind of feel like it's conditioning in a sense. Like I have to go to work, you know, and I've definitely said that in the past. But what if, you know, I just changed my language and said, I get to go to work, you know, and bring kind of like a gratitude approach?
Well, yeah, but saying words are meaningless. Yeah, going and saying, well, I'm just going to change my words. If it's not inculcated and it's not perceived in a way where you're actually taking the job responsibilities you have and asking, how is it helping me fulfill my highest values and really seeing the connection so it's an authentic expression, it's just words. It has to be really inculcated and perceived in a way where I'm inspired to do this. It's not just wording. People can say little peppy affirmations all day long. That means nothing. It has to be something that's literally authentically neuroplastically integrated in the brain where I can see by doing this action, I am getting what I dream about. This is inspiring. If it is, then saying it is just a full natural expression of how you perceive. But if you say something that doesn't match your perception, it's not going to do much.
Right.
I don't recommend that.
Right.
That's imposter syndrome.
That it is. I have one more question for you, Dr. DeMartini, but I just want to let everyone know that I'm going to have all of your social links, websites, books, all of that amazing stuff will be in the show notes of this episode. I know I need to let you go in just a few minutes so that you could hop on another podcast, but one last question for you. And I always find this one to be very interesting. For you, someone that's been speaking for 50 plus years and has an incredible career, I'm really curious to learn if you hopped on as many podcasts as you wanted, you wrote for as many magazines, you accomplish all the goals that you have and set out for, but you could only be remembered for one piece of advice. What would that one piece of advice be?
Give yourself permission to be authentic. The magnificence of who you are is far greater than any fantasies you'll ever impose on yourself.
Say that one more time for me, please.
Give yourself permission to be authentic. Number one at you, never be number two at anybody else, because the magnificence of who you are is greater than any fantasy you'll impose on your life.
I love that.
Don't try to live by other people's fantasies. I was asked by Vogue magazine. They did a 17-question Vogue magazine interview once. And they said, Dr. DeMartini, if there's anybody on the planet, the last question, they were kind of light questions. They were not deep questions. But the very last question, is there anybody on the planet, who in the planet would you love to be? And I looked at him, I go, why on earth would you ask a question like that? I have no desire to be anybody but Dr. John DeMartini. Absolutely no interest in being anybody else. And they go, oh, really? Most people will say, oh, I would wish I could be like that or that. And I say, well, that's not me. I have no desire to be anybody but me. And people don't get that. They sometimes think, well, I wish I could be like this. I wish I could have that. Comparing your current reality to a fantasy is how you depreciate your life. Don't compare yourself to others. Compare your daily actions to your own highest values and metric yourself relative to how it's matching what you really dream about. If you do, you're going to be grateful. You're going to feel self-worth. You're going to end up having fulfillment. You're going to do something inspiring. You're going to exemplify what's possible. You're going to expand space and time horizons. You're going to end up having an amazing contribution. You're going to leave a legacy. There's all kind of things that come out of being just authentic.
Now, that's just for clarity purpose. It's not saying not to look up to someone, though, correct?
Well, what I do is instead of looking up and admiring somebody, I find that futile, because what that does is makes you intimidate yourself, minimize yourself to somebody you intimidate by. What you do is you go and ask, what specific trait, action, inaction do I perceive this individual displaying that I admire most, and write it down. Okay. Then I ask, now, John, go to a moment where and when you perceive yourself displaying or demonstrating that same or similar specific trait, action, inaction. And where was it? When was it? Who was it to and who perceived you that way? And then go to the next moment. Where was it? When was it? Who'd you do it to and who perceived you that way? And then go the next moment, the next moment, the next moment, the next moment, and bring unconscious information conscious to have pure reflective awareness through introspection and reflection. And discover that there's nothing you see in them that you don't already have. And the only reason you admired them is because they reminded you of what you already have, but you're too humble to admit. And wake it up and stand on their shoulders and not live in their shadows and give yourself permission to keep going, not being them, but being you with the same character traits as them. Because in actuality, nothing's ever missing in you. In the theological language, within the soul, nothing's ever missing. It's the pleromic state of fulfillment. But in the senses, things appear to be missing. And the things that appear to be missing are all the things you're too proud or too humble to admit you have that you see in others. And those villains and heroes on the outside are nothing but what's really inside you. And so don't give credit or blame to all these other people out there and minimize yourself to others and try to be like them or exaggerate to others and try to get them to be like you. Be yourself. Let them be themselves. Have sustainable, fair exchange and transactions with them. Love yourself. Love them and get on with what your mission is. And realize nothing's missing. And whatever you see in them, you can stand on their shoulders and do something bad and even greater.
If you had a microphone, that would be a perfect opportunity for a mic drop right there. That was really powerful. I know I need to let you go, Dr. DeMartini. So I just want to express gratitude again for you gracing our airwaves with your wisdom, knowledge, experiences, so on and so forth. So saying thank you again, as mentioned, we'll have socials and websites and links for books and all of that good stuff in the show notes. But thank you for joining us, man.
Thank you.
You have just tuned into the Decoding Success podcast featuring Dr. John DeMartini on episode number 238. To connect with Dr. DeMartini, make sure you're checking out the show notes of this episode. Every episode has all of our guest information, from websites to socials to projects to books. All of that good stuff is always found in the show notes. So I'm just urging you, if you have some compelling feeling taking over you saying, you know what, I need to learn more about Dr. John DeMartini, I need to dive deeper into his work, make sure you head over to the show notes to check that out. And as mentioned, the people in your life, not only you, want to live life by design. You want to live a great life that's built by you and is purposeful. So make sure you share this with those people. Don't be selfish with this knowledge, with this wisdom. Make sure you're sharing this around so that more and more people can hear it, so that more and more people can be impacted by Dr. John DeMartini and his work. Now, if you have yet to hit that subscribe button on this show, we do release episodes every Wednesday, and if you choose not to hit the subscribe button, that's fine by me, whatever you got to do. But if you want to be notified whenever these episodes drop, smash that subscribe button, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google, Audible, wherever, CastBox, wherever you're listening to this from, make sure you are smashing that subscribe button. And then lastly, probably one of the most important things, if you have yet to do so, leaving a rating and review. I'm not going to sit here and ask you for 5-star ratings, but you're still listening to these words come through these speakers, your phone, however they're being delivered to you right now. So make sure that you're leaving that rating and review so we know how to pivot this show. If we need to pivot, let us know what you love about it, what you hate about it, what you think is good about it, what's mediocre about it, who you want to see on the show, because that is exactly how our community grows. And on top of it, that's exactly how we get incredible guests just like Dr. John DeMartini here on the show. So again, make sure you're sharing this. Connect with Dr. John DeMartini in the show notes of this episode. Share it, connect, subscribe, leave that rating and review. And until next time, everyone, be blessed. Peace.